West believes in celebrating life every day, but there was a time when life really seemed to throw her every curve imaginable. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. And I'd like to welcome Elsa Anderson. Elsa, you love to cook, paint, and travel, yes?
Yes, I do, very much.
Well, welcome to Mind Talk. I'm pleased to have you with us.
Thank you. It's my honor to be with you today.
Now, you just heard me say that you love to cook, paint, and travel. You are also the mother of three children and, of course, the author of Say Yes to Life.
Yes, I am the mother of three adult children and the author of Say Yes to Life.
Well, you know, from the cover of Say Yes to Life, it appears to be a book all about fun things, about travel, about champagne. You know, it's kind of not so bad. And yet, at the beginning of Yes to Life, you make a comment that is also almost a chilling comment. You say, and I'm quoting you, "By the time I turned 5, I spoke 4 languages. When cancer stole my tongue, I spoke none at all."
That is absolutely how I felt. I grew up in a multilingual, very cultural, high-educated family. Languages were a given in my household. And when I was diagnosed with oral cancer stage 4, I had to undergo a 3/4 glossectomy of my tongue. And though I accepted the medical outcome, the day after I had surgery, when I awoke fully, so I was on morphine, and I could not speak, my brain wanted to utter a word that was incomprehensible for me, though I had prepared myself for the surgery.
Well, you know, it just makes so much sense that clearly, I mean, your parents spoke Spanish, English, German, Latvian. They also spoke some French and Russian. I mean, as you say, language was, it was a part of your DNA. I mean, it was right. What you heard all the time. And so that to have this happen
was a blow to my mind, to my emotions. It was incomprehensible. And I had to struggle first to understand how I would get that quality of life back and fight for it. Very hard.
And you're saying that 3/4 of your tongue was removed?
Yes, it was removed. It was rebuilt from my left forearm. And the surgery, a plastic surgeon who did the surgery of my tongue, the reconstruction, did a fantastic job. I have a tongue now that was connected to the quarter that was left, but I had to learn to use that new organ. It's as if I was a stroke victim. We are all born with a tongue that you move, but mine had no movement. I had to learn to move this to do basic functions such as swallowing, eating, and speaking. It was there, but it would not do what I wanted it to do.
You know, I think about how many things we as human beings take for granted. And certainly having a tongue is something that, you know, we don't even think about. It's there, we use it, and end of story. It was so very different for you. I want to back up a bit and talk about what your life was like before this? Because you describe yourself as a teenager, when one would think a teenager would be out doing all manner of things. But you spent your life, you say, achieving the perfection that your parents expected. What do you mean by that?
I grew up, unbeknownst to me at the time, so I was able to reflect, my parents were perfectionists. They expected their children to excel to the standards they believed we should achieve, not only in school grades, that was a given, you had to go to the best schools to have great grades, but handle yourself properly. And I don't mean properly in not hurting people and having a moral standard, but excel at everything. And when I mean everything, it was basically everything. And outer appearances were so important. So I don't think any of us are perfect. And for me, through my imperfections, I learned who I really was.
You know, the idea that one would have perfectionistic parents who therefore want their offspring to be perfect. I mean, we know that that exists, but it is such a burden. It sounds like, certainly though, for a period of time, it was a burden that you stepped up to and you did everything you could to be the person that your parents wanted you to be.
Yes, because children and teenagers, but I believe all children, we want to please, we want to be loved, and that's our inner circle, and that's who we look at for guidance.
You say that cancer forced you to find yourself beneath the layers of your parents' expectations. And again, it really does sound like there were layers of expectations that you lived with. You made a decision that when you had children, that they would have a different experience.
Yes. Somehow, without really understanding, I always felt, I couldn't express it, but I felt that how I had been raised, I did not want to duplicate. I fortunately had a woman who was my nanny to myself and my siblings for 17 years, though she was like a second mom to me, and she helped me develop to be able to give and love unconditionally. Through her, I always questioned how my parents were, but I could not question it to them. I questioned it to myself. So when I had children of my own, I decided that I wanted to be a different parent and involved, but respect foremost my children, what their fortitudes were, what they wanted to do with their lives.
Was that difficult for you to do? You didn't particularly have a role model for that kind of parenting.
Yes, that was difficult, and especially at the time, I was married to someone who did not believe also in that way of being, but I had explored therapy, not because I had any mental issues or drug addiction or alcoholism or anything that anyone would see, but I felt that something was not right, and I could not put my thumb on it.
And that was the point at which you sought out, was it traditional therapy or non-traditional therapy?
First I went to traditional therapy for many years, speaking, trying to analyze my life, my relationships with my parents, my husband. That brought me introspection and reflection. And then I sought out alternative therapy, spiritualism.
And for those who don't know, what does that mean, spiritualism?
It's all-encompassing. It's not, for me, it's not one religion. It's your whole being is aligned. It's my body, mind, spirit. And you look for balance in life. You know that there is a higher power. I don't have a name for it, but I do know that I turn to what I believe my higher power is. And in my journey of spiritualism, I learned that we are all made up of energy, and how energy is what we attract and how we move on in life.
In learning these things, were you still married at the time?
In my beginning, yes, I was married at the time, but when I really dove into it was after my divorce, and during a year and a half that my friends and myself, we coined my Eat, Paint, Love year. And I traveled. It was a journey into self-exploration. And during that journey, I met an energy healer, and she opened me into what energy is and how to benefit from it.
And that's Lupita?
Yes, okay. That is Lupita.
Would you say that your traditional and non-traditional therapeutic work had any impact on your decision to divorce, or was that entirely separate?
I think it did impact it, yes, it did. As I got to know myself and I was true to myself, I realized I could not stay in the marriage. It's all about knowing what is, you're honoring yourself, ultimately.
Did your therapeutic work have a relationship, have an impact on your relationship with your family, with your parents, with your siblings, with friends?
Yes, but I think always in a positive way. I did not expect anyone to maybe understand. I expected them just to respect my decision. I did not want to make them understand, but I hoped that by seeing how positive I was and how really I was happy in my life, they would respect that decision.
And did they?
For the most part, yes, they did. I let go of some people, but there are some people that are in our lives for a certain period of time, and they help form us during those periods. And I'm happy for when they were in my life, but they no longer are.
You say in Say Yes to Life that in the year 2000, you were in Asia for 3 months with your children, and there was a temple in Cambodia that really seemed to have an impact on your spiritual path. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. We went for 3 months to Asia, as you stated. During our stay, I wanted to go to Angkor Wat, which is in Siem Reap, and had just started tourism opening to the outside world. I noticed when we arrived this incredible respectfulness, and the only word I could find is people at peace with each other, though they hustled and bustled, going to the markets, doing everyday life. And having lived in Latin America for many of my years, I'm used to marketplace chaos, which is always chaotic. But here it seemed the correct word was things were peaceful. There was respect for this. So got a tour of Angkor Wat. And if anyone has gone to this area, now it's overflowing with tourism, but we were the only ones in Angkor Wat that day. And our guide started speaking to us about his life. He mentioned he had been in the killing field with Pol Pot. And I was shocked, and I started asking him more about that time. And he divulged that his family, several siblings and his parents, had been killed. They had all been lined up on either side of him.
Oh, my.
Being a Westerner, I immediately said, how do you feel about Pol Pot? And his answer shocked me even further because he said, I let go of that anger years ago. I asked him, was he religious? And his reply was, no, I'm Buddhist.
Interesting.
Which I didn't know what to make out of that answer. He then continued and said, I let go of that anger because I knew that anger would kill everything I have today and my happiness. I have a wonderful business. I have a wonderful wife. I have my children. And in that moment, sort of a switch went off in my head that was, wow, this is incredible for someone to have seen such a traumatic, impactful event in their life and not to feel that hate that one would normally feel in their life.
It's pretty extraordinary.
Yes.
One of the things that you talk about in terms of your visit in Cambodia was that you noticed something that really in a lot of ways is incredibly different, almost the polar opposite from what you often see in America. You say that you observed how much respect the Cambodians seem to have for their families and for their children, and that children didn't seem to be an extension of their parents. That wasn't the child's job. That's really, first of all, that was different from your personal experience, but also different from the experiences of many children.
Absolutely. On that trip, it was overwhelming how I saw such happiness, but parents being respectful to a child, not telling with orders what they must do, but listening, which I believe listening is an art, to what the child was stating to them. And I don't mean from a spoiled standpoint that the child was saying, I want this. It would be, today I will need help of yours in the marketplace. And the child would say, I have homework assignments. Can I? And the mother would say, after you finish your homework assignments, would you please help me? And I thought, wow, the child naturally wants to help, but you are including them and what they can do in certain time frames. You're not imposing your way, and you're working in a cohesive unit. You're listening to what's going to make it a success.
Really a very different way, a very different path, a very different approach from the ones that many parents take today. Ilse, we're going to take a break, and when we return, we will continue our conversation with Ilse Anderson, author of Say Yes to Life. Ilse, you talk about teaching your children the difference between emotions and feelings, and that suppressing either is not a good thing to do. And I have to say that that's a challenge for many adults, being able to distinguish the difference between emotions and feelings. How did that approach impact you and your children, teaching them something so profound and so difficult for so many people to be able to distinguish between?
Well, going back to my childhood, I was never able to express my feelings to my parents. I knew that I loved them. I knew they loved me. But we did not discuss feelings. I discussed feelings with my nanny. So I was, at an early age, very aware that you can have emotions, but feelings are something else. And I did not want my children ever not to be able to discuss if they were scared of something or feared, which is also a response, or how they felt about anything. Because being able to discuss those very important things not only forms us as a human being, but it impacts the type of relationship you have with your parents.
Absolutely. With yourself, with your parents, with everyone around you.
Yes.
Your life, I mean, I know it, at one point you chose to divorce, but your life, you were well-spoken. You knew many languages. It doesn't sound like finances was a particular concern. You were well-traveled. life was really going pretty well for you. And then something happened that really kind of knocked you back on your feet for a bit. Tell us about the fire that you experienced.
Yes. During my Eat, Paint, Love journey, I leased or rented places in different areas of the world to explore art, particularly. Barcelona was one of these places. I had spent time as a child close to Barcelona, so when I chose this city, there was also a reason. I leased an apartment in an area of Barcelona that's called the Gothic area, El Gótico, and it's all medieval buildings near the ocean, cobblestone streets. Like many streets in Europe, some are very narrow that basically a car can't even, a Fiat can't make it through. But that's what in Romanticism adds all the charm. And when I saw this place, I was like, oh, this is wonderful. And on top of it was all modern on the inside. So I had this medieval outside-looking building and the inside, not like most European bathrooms that are older. It had a bathtub, a shower, heated if I needed it. It was great. But during my daughter and a friend came to visit for a weekend, and I was so excited to show them my city, and we went around, and one of my daughters left that morning, and as I came back up from leaving them in the taxi, I went to get dressed, get my clothes out. I opened my closet, and it was in flames. So I quickly closed it. I took very quickly a small bag, drew my passport, and at that time I had my little fur baby, Titan, who was a Bichon, put his documents in the case and went out to the living room, called my landlord, called the bakery downstairs, called the fire department, and the apartment started to be engulfed in flames.
Oh, my.
It was an electrical fire that went through very quickly, and all I could do was stand on the balcony. It was the fourth floor. I was on the fourth story. There was one story up above me, and I did not know how we were going to get out.
How did you get out?
Well, we had to jump.
Oh, my.
And the fire department came, but they could not bring the fire truck closer, so they put this trampoline mattress. First, I threw Titan out, and then I had to jump.
I cannot imagine what that must have felt like in that moment. And such a rush of feelings. You go to get dressed and your closet is inflamed, and then all of a sudden your home is inflamed and you're jumping off a balcony. I can't imagine.
It was very frightening, especially animals have better instincts than we do. And I was holding my pup, who was at that time 12 years old, and he was trembling. So that only got my mind going in that, if he's scared, this is definitely not good. And but we got out unfortunately, the my floor and the floor above were completely destroyed. And for many days afterwards, I could not sleep. It was just a recurring nightmare. But finally, I could put that into perspective and move forward.
And where did you move forward to? What was your next stop?
My first stop was going back to New York. And from there, I decided I would go to San Miguel Allende in Mexico, which is an artist community in central Mexico, and I would continue my art endeavors there.
And how was that experience for you?
Fantastic. I love Mexico, but anyone who knows, or if they don't know, San Miguel is a beautiful colonial town, very picturesque in the mountains. They have so many churches that you're always hearing the ringing of the bells of a different church and the bustle of people coming and going. It's a paradise. It's also very much, there's many, in the history of San Miguel, they stayed. There are many energy healers because of the volcanic rocks and the quartz. There's something that you feel of peacefulness in San Miguel.
It sounds glorious.
It is. And most people that either retire or go there find what they're looking for. I assimilated a lot to Santa Fe in the United States. It has all the color that lots of Georgia O'Keeffe paintings have. San Miguel also has that, but it has that peace and that tranquility that we all at certain times want.
So at this point in your life, I mean, you've had a wonderful life, but you've certainly had some quite significant challenges, to say the least. There was a time when you became aware that you were feeling tired, and certainly your life is not the life of somebody who's tired. What did you think when you first started noticing that you were just more fatigued than you were used to being?
I could not put my finger on why I was getting so tired. I had traveled, as I stated, for 18 months nonstop. And then when I returned to Dallas, I decided to sell my very large home. So in the beginning, I thought it must be the stress of the move, of the traveling. But I started noticing that the tiredness never left.
You know, it was interesting to me to read your comment about your home that you ultimately sold, because it sounded like it had been really a respite for you. You describe every room as being something that was really peaceful and wonderful for you. But you decided you didn't need all those trappings. That's why you sold your home.
Correct. And I had awoken from the dream. The home, when I had it designed and built, was for a family. And so my children and I are a family, there was not the family anymore, and I wanted to simplify my life, and that was a complication in my life.
Interesting. So you sold your home. You're still tired, though.
Yes, I sold my home. moved into a great apartment. I was painting, but the tiredness continued, and I visited doctors, acupuncturists, could not pinpoint why I was tired. Everyone told me I was fine.
You know, it's so scary when I hear stories like that, and many people have that experience. They know there's something wrong, but, you know, the folks they go to say, no, you're fine. It's all good.
Yes.
There came a time, though, when you went to a particular doctor and heard him say some words that were the last thing that you expected to hear.
Yes. I could not quite accept that I was fine. I wanted to be fine, but I had never felt the way I was feeling. And finally, I had another symptom, which was a chronic sore throat. So I went to an ear, nose, and throat specialist. I was hoping to do an allergy assessment, because many people in Dallas suffer from allergies. We've turned a prairie into an oasis of many living things, so people naturally have sinus problems, allergy problems. And during what I thought was an allergy assessment, he decided to do an endoscopy and informed me that he thought I had cancer.
I can't imagine what that word said to you and what that felt like to you. You're expecting to hear allergies, maybe some shots, maybe some pills, and he's telling you cancer?
Yes, he stated cancer, and he said we're going to do a biopsy. And I, in my mind, said, okay, he definitely does not know me. I don't get cancer. This is ridiculous. How can I possibly get cancer? I've never smoked. I'm not a big drinker. I eat healthy. He's crazy. So he did the biopsy. I walked out of there and had a very hard time accepting what he was stating to me the whole day.
Well, of course, because as you said, you don't get cancer. You're active,
right.
You're healthy, you lead a healthy life. That was silly. He was just a silly doctor. But he wasn't such a silly doctor.
Nope. He sent the biopsy away, and within 24 hours, he called me back to his office. And yes, I found out that I had tongue cancer, which was a shock.
I was going to say, that couldn't have made any sense to you.
It didn't. I couldn't. He tried to explain what tongue cancer was, how, because of smoking, drinking. Also, it's usually a cancer that men develop. Now the statistics are beginning to change, but it's still predominantly men. And I thought, wow, this really can't be happening. This is a nightmare. He could not tell me, though, at what stage it was. And again, in my mind, I said, well, it has to be relatively early, because I've done nothing to get this type of cancer.
Elsa, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue and learn what stage the doctor ultimately told you that you were in. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. Stay where you are. So the doctor told you that tongue cancer, typically that's a male issue. You didn't smoke, you didn't drink, you knew you weren't a man. So clearly, whatever stage you were in, it had to be at the very beginning. But that's not what the doctor said.
No. When my ENT referred me to a specialist who would establish the stage I was in. And he is a foremost doctor for head, neck type of cancer. I went to the appointment, and he told me that I had stage 4, tongue or oral cancer.
Stage 4.
Yes.
There are only 4 stages.
That's correct.
What did you think?
I thought a freight train was pinning me down. I thought this had to be a mistake. I might have cancer, but stage 4, I could not in that dire place.
It just didn't make any sense to you.
No, it did not.
But it was stage 4. You did have surgery. They did remove the majority of your tongue. And then you had surgery again. And yet, the book that you've written says, Say Yes to Life. And you talk about the value and the power of gratitude. Given the traumatic experiences that you have experienced through your life, including oral cancer, how can you possibly be at a place where you're talking about gratitude and saying yes to life?
Well, after I had surgery, that I could not speak, swallow, I could not eat, I was connected to a feeding tube, I did get frustrated. I did question when or how I would get my quality of life back. And because of my journey with Lupita, who would often send me subliminal messages, I realized I had to change my perspective. I could not be daily thinking of what I did not have, but I had to think about what I still had. So instead of thinking, which I did for a bit, that I could not swallow, I could not speak, I could not eat, I would think of how wonderful I can still see a sunrise and set from the hospital window. I still have a brain that can process and think. I have my 3 loving children that are around me 24/7. Our bonds are growing deeper and stronger. As I change my perspective daily, I started keeping a journal, and I would write one thing which I was grateful for, then two things. And as I reread those and focused on that, slowly my life became better. Today I'm speaking, which, and pretty clearly also, I'm able to eat. I can do many of the things that at one time were a dream, and I attributed to changing my perspective and not focusing on the negative.
There is a quote that you once read in a magazine at a tea shop, and it's such a wonderful quote that I'm going to share it again. And in this moment in our conversation, it seems so appropriate. Running away from your problems is a race you will never win.
That quote I saw at a tea shop the morning before my first meeting with Lupita. And I think it spoke to me, and I have always journaled, so I wrote it in my journal. In some ways, we all run away from ourselves. I know I was. My life was full. I had really no reason to complain, except there was something always eating at me that I was not fulfilled. I was missing something. And life should not be emotionally this difficult. And as I confronted myself, I won the race because I got to know who I was.
And who is the person you are today? Tell us, introduce us to her.
Well, I've let go of many, though I have, because of my education, I'm educated, and I know manners, I know etiquette. Life for me today is very simple. I know what I want, and foremost, I know what I will not accept in my life. I listen to my gut. Clearly, I understand it. And it doesn't mean that I can't engage with some people. They just don't become my inner circle.
That's an important distinction to be able to make, and one that a lot of folks really have difficulty with. Setting those
yes.
limits, knowing what's okay for you, and quite frankly, being clear about what you will not accept in your life, period, end of story.
Absolutely. You're honest and you honor yourself.
What are some of the things that are on your I will not accept this list?
Chaos. When I see, we all can appear very charming, engaging, but usually most of the people that appear on the outer level, so very engaging, are usually very troubling. And I look a little bit further. I won't accept any sort of toxicity. People that are not willing to apologize. People that are always right, that want to impose their ways, or people that judge. That to me is, for me, a red flag. I don't accept that into anywhere near me anymore.
The idea, the overarching concept that you've indicated is chaos. You will not accept chaos. Don't want it in your life. You know it when you see it, and you're not willing to invite it in. I know there are people listening right now to your voice saying, well, that's a great plan, but how do I do that? How do I keep the chaos out of my life, particularly in today's world where it seems so incredibly chaotic?
Yes, life is chaotic, but I think all of us have an inner voice. We have that gut feeling when we meet someone about that individual, and we should listen to it. And as we listen to that voice, we honor ourselves. And it doesn't mean we can't engage in some way. It just means that person does not, at least for me, is not in my inner circle, is not my best friend, would never be a partner in my life, because they will never respect me. It's clear they don't respect themselves, so why would they respect me? So why would I want them in my life, be it a female or a male? And if you look at their life, you can pretty much see what is the real life and what is what they pretended to be.
So paying attention to your gut, honoring yourself, honoring your own inner wisdom is an important part of keeping chaos off your front doorstep.
Absolutely. Totally. And in anything, when you honor yourself and respect yourself, other people follow suit.
That is very true. Why do you believe that having faith and trust in the unknown is important?
Because we would all like to be able to see the things that we want to manifest, but that's not how manifestation works. It all starts with a dream that we have, and it's how much you believe in that dream, in your goals, which are in an unknown realm at that point, that you will act as if you have them. Then you will manifest them, but they're nothing but an unknown at the time that you wish them to happen.
Elsa, what is your life like today? You've been through so much.
I am. It's going to probably sound cliche. I am extremely happy at this point. I have achieved my goals of speaking, eating, very basic for most people functions. I know who I am, which is very important, I believe, for anyone. I am happy to share my journey with whoever would want to listen. I have learned that we fabricate our own complications in life when we don't learn who we are. And at this point, I can completely say I do know who I am. And that has me fulfilled. And the experiences that I had, though difficult, made me understand life better.
The ability to know who you are and honor that awareness, it's so critical.
Yes. If you know who you are, you know what you want, what you will allow, and until you know who you really are, can you attract not only the things, but the right people into your life.
Which is, again, a part of living a essentially chaos-free environment. You talked a few minutes ago about the surgeon with whom you worked. Do you want to share that doctor's name?
Yes. His name is Dr. Lance Oxford. And him and his team, and my oncologist is Dr. Eric Nadler, they gave me medically a second chance at life, but it was incredible because how I was open to their radical approach, because the approach Dr. Oxford had was radical, removing 3/4 of my tongue. When I had my medical records sent to other places, they would have done radiation chemotherapy first. But cancer, one has to remember, is relentless. And if I did the approach that was less invasive, yes, the tumor might shrink, but I would still have cancer. And I've seen people who have done a less radical approach, and today they are still fighting cancer. And deep down inside, I knew I wanted to use all the tools and resources once and fight it from the onset. So I gambled. I chose the very invasive, thinking the truth is the truth. I have stage 4 cancer. I don't want to fight it a bit and a bit more. And sometimes we all know when a marriage is bad, a business is bad, and we can't put a Band-Aid. We need to do something radical. And that's why I chose the path I did, and the past I struggled for a year to reclaim my life, but I have reclaimed it.
It has been a battle well fought and well won, I would suggest.
Yes.
Elsa Anderson, author of Say Yes to Life. Elsa, you have a website. Can you spell the name of your website for folks?
Yes. It's ilseanderson.com.
Terrific. Thank you again so very much for sharing your journey and for helping all of us to learn the importance of saying yes to life. Folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. It's available to you on demand by going to myndtalk.org, or you can download the Mind Talk app from the iTunes or Google Play stores. I'd love to hear from you. My email is Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Again, that's myndtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. You take care.